for the benefit of our internet listeners, we're going to have a short class today. We're going to cover the rest of four, and then the introduction to five, and then we cut it off because I have to get over to the hospital because Mary Beth's having her biopsy today, and I want to be there with her for that. So it'll be a short class today. So we are at the end of four. We have two questions. That one is 4.3.12.1. And so it begins with a quote from Teresa. She says, "When something is truly from God, there is no languishing in the soul, even though there may be an interior and exterior languishing. For the soul experiences deep feelings on seeing itself close to God. Nor does the experience last so long before a very short while, although one becomes absorbed again." Here, Teresa introduces the notion that intimate experiences with God at this level and the next levels come in short bursts, not long and drawn-out experiences. And each encounter, God will teach us something of himself or of ourselves in relation to him. Why do you think these encounters have such short duration? What crosses your mind when you hear her say that these experiences of this real intimacy with God are of short duration?
Probably all we can handle.
Yeah.
You know, can you imagine?
Yeah. Because in heaven, it's going to be continuous. Mm-hmm. But right now, we really can't handle that, you know? So,
right.
But also, he's got to teach us in spurts. Each time we have this encounter, he's mm-hmm. teaching us something about himself or about our relationship. And every encounter is going to teach us something new and different. And that gives us material to pray with and to meditate on and those kind of things.
Small steps, right.
Small steps, baby steps.
Yep, baby steps, one step at a time, yep.
Just learning the faith is kind of like that, you know?
Yeah.
You just can't, it's a lot.
Yeah. Well, it's like the whole conversion process, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You get somebody who converts to being a Catholic. It's not a boom, all of a sudden I'm now a resoundingly informed Catholic. You know, you take baby steps. You have enough to get you over the hump. But then as you grow in your faith, you're constantly learning more and more and more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how this is, only on a much more spiritual level. Morning, Bob. Okay, so... So these are short encounters. Each one is different. Each one's going to teach you something. Each one is going to bring you closer to God. Each one is going to give you a more intimate experience with God. Okay, then 4.3.14.1. So here Teresa is warning about another danger. She's always worried about danger because she knows how much the devil would love to get somebody at this level to quit and give up on prayer and go back to the outside world again. I mean, that would be like a cherry on the top of the banana split for her, for Satan. Here, Teresa warns about another danger, which she says is the danger of weak heads and imaginations. Now, this is a woman who did not have a weak head, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you read about some of the encounters she had with some of these priests that didn't know what they were doing. You know, she was not very weak-headed. Sometimes they'd be scared to death to hear her confession. But she warns about the danger of weak heads and imaginations, a kind of self-delusion where they think they actually see everything they imagine. She says she will deal with this more later on, but she says it is very dangerous. She's going to talk about that more in Dwelling Place 6. She says that because the natural and supernatural are joined together here, the devil can do more harm. In the next dwelling places, God does not give the devil so much leeway. So as we progress in prayer, God is protecting us more and more and more against the wiles of the devil. He's not letting him have so much, you know, influence on us. So we are becoming his. We are becoming God's. And he's saying, their mind, leave them alone. And the only way we get out of that is if we ourselves decide we've had enough and we turn away and give up on prayer and go back because we say, oh, it's just too hard. I don't want to keep doing this. This is just too hard. You know, you can't let yourself get into that combined set. You got to keep that final goal in mind all the time. The final goal meaning this, the spiritual marriage with God, that intimate communion with God, that is the beginning of heaven for you. The Blessed Mother said, if we can get to that stage, when we do die and pass over, we'll go into heaven and we won't even notice the transition. It'll be like going from 1 minute to the next. We'll be so close to God, we won't even see it as a transition as much as anything else, which is kind of a cool thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So that goal, to get that intimate relationship with God that is lasting, is the goal. Because God is now in charge of your soul. He's your spiritual director. He's the one guiding your soul toward Him. He's drawing you to Himself. Remember, in the Gospel, Jesus said, "When I'm lifted up, I will draw all men to Myself." Well, this is one of the main ways that He fulfills that promise of drawing us to Himself. So that's something we need to keep in mind. So the question that Teresa, the question we have reading this says, do you think many people with weak heads and imaginations will make it to these fourth dwelling places?
No.
I think they might. They might start, but I don't think they'll get to the end of it. Because the weak-headedness interferes with your perseverance. Because you have a tendency to respond to that, you know, because you actually think you're seeing something or experiencing something that you're really not. Because mm-hmm. Your imagination is playing a big role there. And when that happens, that presents a problem. Because the fact of the soul or intellect and will, those are the things they have to be operating, not your imagination. And that's something we tend to forget. So all this relationship with God is a relationship of love, and love is an act of the will. And so it's the will that's in the intellect that is drawing us into this relationship, or responding to God, drawing us into the relationship. So it's not the imagination that's going to play a part in this. But if you're weak-headed and stuff, you're going to have an active imagination and think all these things. You're actually seeing stuff in there, and the devil uses that to play on that to try to draw you back to himself. He wants you out of the castle. He wants you back into the world. He wants you on the other side of the body. He doesn't want you exploring God in your soul. He wants you out of there. He will encourage you to do anything other than continue to pray. You want to watch football? He's all in favor of that. You want to go out for dinner? He's all in favor of that. Anything other than relating to God, he's all in favor of that. The last thing he wants you to do is pray. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Okay, let's get an idea what we're going to be covering in the fifth dwelling place. We'll cover this.
I found it.
You found it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll give you this copy if you want. So the numbering scheme is the same as the ones we did before.
Okay.
In these fifth dwelling places, we enter what one might call the home stretch of our journey to the center of the soul. Now keep in mind that when Teresa wrote Interior Castle, she wrote the last two chapters in 1 month.
Mm.
But yet they comprise the bulk of the book. 6 and 7 have 11 chapters.
Yeah. Look at it.
You can just look at it and see how big it is. So we're going to spend a lot of time in 6 and 7. So we'll take it easy going through that to see how that whole thing develops. But she compares... she likens the 5th, 6th, and 7th dwelling places to the 3 phases of courtship and marriage customary in the Spain of her time. And there's a meeting where the man and woman meet each other and get to know each other and decide whether they would make a good match. And so in the fifth dwelling place is actually that encounter with God, where you actually have an encounter with Him. Mm-hmm. And so He's teaching you about Him, you're learning more about yourself, and you're looking at, you know, how is this going to work? Am I going to be able to handle a relationship with God? We know God can handle a relationship with us because He made our soul. But it's a question of, can we respond properly to His call? And we hope the answer is yes, of course. So the second phase of the courtship is betrothal. That's where the couple grow in love for each other. And that's where you get engaged. You get an engagement ring and all that kind of stuff. You make the man would go to the girl's father and say, I'd like to marry your daughter. The first time he goes to the father and says, I'd like to court your daughter. And so that's the meeting thing. And then with betrothal, he says, I'd like you to give me her hand in marriage. And so that's the phase where they're engaged. And so this next phase is the engagement, where they're very close to each other, they're in love with each other, they're looking forward to that intimate union that you would have in marriage. And then the third phase is the actual marriage itself, where the couple each give themselves totally to the other. She emphasizes she's only speaking spiritually, not corporally, because a lot of people get confused on that. You know, when you talk about the spiritual marriage, I think I mentioned before when I was at St. William, we had a guy in our class that we studied John of the Cross, and he talks about this spiritual marriage. He just couldn't grasp that. To him, marriage is always a physical relationship, mm-hmm. a corporal thing. And he just couldn't get in his head what a spiritual marriage was. And and the language bothered him because he said, I can't do that with God. You know. So he was getting all upset about that.
Because he's a man, too.
Because he's a man. You know. He said, God's a man. You know, I can't do this. And so he was getting all flipped up over this. You know, he just didn't understand that it's totally spiritual, the relationship, totally spiritual. And so he really had a hard time with that. But it is purely spiritual. And that's the kind of thing that we have a prelude of that when we receive the Eucharist. Because in the Eucharist, God is giving us Himself completely, body, blood, soul, and divinity. And He wants us to offer ourselves to Him. The question is, how completely can we do that at this level of our prayer? As your prayer progresses, your offer has more and more meaning. Because right now, every time we go to communion, we can say, you know, thank you for this gift of yourself. I offer myself to you without reservation. Do with me whatever you want. Use me any way you want. Let me never be separated from you. You know. But the intensity of that and the deep meaning of what you might say there changes as their relationship progresses. And in that gift of yourself has much more meaning when you understand more about what it is you're giving. Because you're always learning more about yourself in this whole process. And so when you say, I offer myself to you, it's only what you understand about yourself at that time. But as your self-knowledge grows, when you say, I offer you myself, you have a much more understanding of what it is you're offering. And so and that's why Teresa keeps saying throughout the entire book that humility and self-knowledge are the two things you have to always keep coming back to. You always have to keep coming back, you know, where am I in my self-awareness of what I am and how I'm growing. And that's, you know, so important to do that. And so she says, previously we were focused on self-knowledge. Self-knowledge and humility continue to be important. That never changes. But in this fifth dwelling place, God begins to share Himself and teach. Actually, it fuses more accurately. They call it infused contemplation, when God, in just an instant, can teach you more about Himself than you could learn reading thousands of books. Because your soul has an infinite capacity to receive whatever He wants to give you. There's no limit to what your soul can receive from Him. He can, you know, He created your soul. You can receive whatever He wants to give you. And he can do that in just a couple of seconds. He can. So it's called infused contemplation. So he gives you this knowledge about himself, then you use that knowledge to progress in prayer. Use that knowledge in your prayer. So he's giving you food for prayer. It's going to help you grow so that he can give you more. So that when you offer yourself to him, when you receive the Eucharist, you're offering a greater understanding of who and what you are. So you're actually offering more. Because you're offering what you were plus what he has given you in this contemplation. So you're actually offering more and more of yourself. And that's why Teresa says earlier, if you remember, about the capacity of the soul. There's no limit to the capacity of the soul to grow. And so as you offer yourself to God, you're offering what you have, what your capacity is at that point. But he wants to give you more capacity. He wants to keep increasing your capacity for love. And so as you keep growing, that's going to happen. The prayer in this dwelling place, in the fifth dwelling place, is more supernatural than in the previous dwelling places. So the prayer you experience here is going to be more supernatural than the one you did in the fourth dwelling place. She describes some experiences that she had, but notes that others may have different experiences, and some may have very few. But even if one has none, that does not mean that the soul is not progressing. It is God's decision to grant them, and he decides who will benefit from them. Teresa does point out that most of those who have been through the fourth dwelling place will enter here. If you've been through the fourth, you're gonna enter into the fifth. And then what you experience is up to God. You know, there was in Cincinnati, Ohio, there's a Holy Spirit Center there. And the Blessed Mother went to one of the priests there and said, I want you to buy this seminary. It was the old bishop's house and seminary. And it was an old building that had been abandoned for like 5 years. She said, I want you to buy it. So this priest went to the archdiocese and said, I want to buy the building. And the bishop gave him some enormous amount of money he wanted for the building. He said, I can't afford that. So he went back to the Blessed Mother and said, I haven't got that kind of money. She said, don't worry about it. And so this went back and forth. Finally, he got the building for a song. And then he started the Spirituality Center. And she told him to use the building to establish a retreat center. To begin with the monastic community first, then the clergy and professor religious, and then the laity. So she said the clergy needed the help first because they weren't where they should be, and then use them to help the laity. So she set the spirit up. So she would come to them as Our Lady of Light. And then once a month, this visionary that was working with the priest would be there, and it would happen at night, and then she would come, and the angels would come. And a lot of people could actually see her come, and they see the angels, and you see these streaks of light coming down from where she was. And some people took pictures of it, and you could actually see the lights and the angels and all. And so I asked Father Smith one day when I was there if he ever saw it. He said, no, I know what happens. I don't have to see it. You know, she lets you see what you need to see to convince you. If you want to see what that looked like, I've got pictures of it on my computer. I can show you. I'll share my computer. Let's see. How do I do that? Share screen. Yeah, share screen. Okay. Let's... Okay, I can't do this yet. I got to call it up first. Okay, let me call it up. This really looks cool when you look at it.
Our Lady of Light Ministries, yeah, in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Our Lady of Light, yeah, Cincinnati, Ohio, yeah. It's really cool. Okay. Oh, I got the wrong thing here. Got to get my pictures. My pictures, Crucifix Family, Parky Hubble, Images, Shadow. pictures.
Oh, there's actually a documentary on it.
A Lady of Light. Okay. Okay, now I'm going to go back and do the share screen thing. Share screen. Here. These are the pictures you see here. Can you see this now? Here's one picture up here. You can see the Blessed Mother was up here, and then the angels were going out into the crowd. You want to come over here? Yeah. This really looks cool.
Looks like there's a YouTube video on it, too.
Yeah. So it was pitch dark at night, and Blessed Mother was here, and then this is one of the angels, and they were coming down. The angels would go down among all the people and be with them. It was looks really cool.
Is it outside?
It's outside at night, yeah. So there were no lights on the building. All the light you see here is from the Blessed Mother. And you can see down here some of the angels. And some of them look like they got little trumpets they're playing, you know? See the little trumpets going up here each year? And they come in and they fly around the people and all. And just it's just really kind of cool. And here's another one. Here's an angel. You can see, you actually see the angel look like, but they're all flying all around the people, and the Blessed Mother's talking to the visionary up here at the top. But there is no light, no artificial light of any kind shining on this building. All this comes from the Blessed Mother. So some people don't see anything. It's just pitch dark. And other people saw this, and one of the ladies that were there taking pictures got this on her film. And she was able to share that with me. Here's another one that looks pretty cool.
Wow.
See all the angels. All the people are there. Hundreds of people are there. And the angels are among all the different people. It's really cool. Let's see. Here's another one. Here's another one, yeah. It's pretty similar to the other one. Then here's another one of the angels. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. What'd you say?
What year?
What year was this? Probably about. It was before I retired.
So
it's probably around 2000, 1998, something like that. Something like that. But here's another one. So. You can see how they just fly among all the people. You see this little trumpet here from one of the angels?
Wow.
The angel's sitting here, and you see this little trumpet he's playing in right here. So we can't hear the trumpet, but the Blessed Mother can hear it, you know? It's like you're blowing the trumpet for the king or something, you know, in the old medieval days. So they would come in, and they would have the music and everything. So it's really kind of cool. Really neat pictures. I think we saw one like that before, yeah.
Wow.
So that's really cool. Anyway, I thought that we would enjoy seeing that.
I was always told that if an angel's around you, you'll find a little white feather.
Yeah.
Or you can see angels in the clouds.
Yes, stop sharing. Okay, well, that's everything I got today. I'm going to go ahead and stop it now. And, heading over to the hospital. Very glad George is making progress. I was really glad to hear that.
We'll keep Mary Beth in our prayers.
Yeah, we'll keep. Yeah, please pray for Mary Beth.
Yeah, our prayers.
Yes, yes, Mary Beth and you are both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they said she probably won't hear for 3 or 4 days the results of the biopsy, so we'll have to wait for that. But yeah, keep her in your prayers. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And have a great week. We'll see you next week. And have a regular session next week, hopefully.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Have a blessed week.
You too. You too, all of you. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.